I got friends, only wanna talk business. I got expensive, cause winning's expensive. I got expensive, cause winning's expensive. I've been reading all the work.
Hi, welcome to this episode of Put That Coffee Down. I'm live on location here with Hiram Hartnett. He is the Senior VP of Sales over at Pegasus Logistics Group, and we are in, I believe, Appell. Is that the way?
Appell, Texas. Yeah.
Appell, Texas, over here near DFW Airport, talking about sales and brokerage and all of that good stuff. So, Hiram, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it. Honor to be here. We're excited to have you on site here at corporate.
Perfect. Well, let's talk a little bit about Pegasus Logistics and kind of when you're founded. You've been here 19 years, I think you were saying, and kind of what you guys do in the 3PL.
Yeah, so 28-year-old company founded by Ken Beam. I'm proud to still be privately held, single ownership. I've been here 19 years. I think what's pretty amazing about companies, you're going to see a lot of people. Continue to bring on a bunch of amazing talent, play heavy in the freight forwarding space, end-to-end solutions for a lot of the high-tech automotive, medical equipment, Fortune 100 companies out there in the world.
Nice. So a lot of high-touch, white-glove type of high-value freight moving in.
Yep. Out. Yeah. So we like to use the term consequence, pain. If there's no consequence to us making a mistake, then typically it's not an ideal client. So we thrive in the high touch, really human touch aspect of bringing that superior client experience.
Perfect. Well, let's talk about sales. Let's talk about you've been here 19 years.
Yes.
Been in logistics for 19 years.
Yes.
How has sales changed, or has it really changed at all in those 19 years?
So started in the trucking business with Consolidated Freightways as a sales rep. Moved on to overnight, then got into the freight forwarding space. And I think change would be an understatement, right? If you go back 19 years, you beat on doors, you rarely even made phone calls, you walked into people's buildings. Honestly, in my opinion, it was easy, right? Because you got easy access to decision makers, or you got at least easy access to people.
Yeah.
You fast forward to today, we've been through the virtual selling environments. You can't knock on any doors hardly because you can't get into buildings. And so now you've got to utilize all these tools to somehow get in the door with clients that are getting just overrun with prospecting and sales calls.
I know.
So drastic change.
You know, 20 years ago, you know, I was around 20 years ago, not in logistics, but in other things, security wasn't really an issue
in
the old days. Now it's like hyper security. So you can't really get in the door.
That's right. That's right.
In that respect. And then you don't know. Right now, you're talking about virtual selling. If that person that you need to speak to is...
That's right. That's right. And that's for sure. I mean, back in the day, you called on a customer. They were typically in that facility or in that manufacturing facility. Now you've got people anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah.
So you can't just scour LinkedIn and hope that it says that they sit in Salt Lake City when in reality they sit in Baltimore. And so it makes the selling environment harder. Time is money. Travel, all that other stuff.
Yeah.
And then again, from a client perspective, you've got a lot of really cool shields you can use to avoid the prospecting salesperson.
I know, so many shields. There is a shield that you can use. We were talking about it a while ago. When you're a salesperson, to eliminate not only the costs, the loss of productivity of on-site visits, but also, you know,
the windshield time.
Yeah.
The windshield time is important. I remember, you know, even 10 years ago, 5 years ago, you're always trying to get face-to-face meetings from the get-go.
Yep.
You know, you don't really want a phone meeting. You want to dive right into that face-to-face.
That's right.
So, you know, driving down to Dallas from Oklahoma or things like that. I mean, this, like, you know, 6 hours down here, 6 hours back, hotel.
That's right.
Two lost days of really working to go do 5 or 6 meetings where you had no idea how it was going to.
That's right.
You walked in to, I remember walking into many offices and like, I
that's right.
But using the virtual sales tool in the qualifying process as another rung in the ladder to qualify, make sure that it's worth even coming down and visiting.
Yep.
And how that's a tool for you guys.
Yeah, for sure. So we talked about that earlier. I think what's awesome is time is money, right? You could save on travel and all the basic costs, the dollars. But you know, in sales, you want to have a productive meeting, and honestly, the prospect wants to have a productive meeting. So versus flying to Baltimore to go make that call, spending an hour in somebody's office, and then realizing that there's no fit, you've wasted both of each other's time and commitment. Versus now, we tend to try and get that prospecting appointment, get that qualification done virtually to really make sure that there is a go-forward path with that prospect. And then it allows us to be more prepared for the second call, for one, allow, if we need to go see them face-to-face, which we typically do, we can even bring in our solutions group sooner than later. So in reality, it can speed up a deal or a solution for a customer. What was funny, though, I just thought about it. What was interesting is when COVID hit, we went heavy on virtual sales training. And what we found is so many salespeople think that they can walk in and win with charisma. Right? Everybody likes me. You know, I just walk in. If I get in front of them, they're going to buy from me. And I think I've heard that from every salesperson I've ever met.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The reality there is, though, what you found in virtual selling is a lot of people don't have the selling skills necessary to really win. They use their charisma to win, and it changed the game. So investing in your people and making sure they understand sales process, the right messaging, how to target customers and have the right conversations became a much bigger situation for us.
And I think you see that when you use your charisma to win, but oftentimes they become bad deals because
that's right.
Thought out.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't have the X's and O's in place, and that's what actual selling kind of forced in, where you have to really provide solutions.
That's right.
Front.
That's right.
For the deal to progress further.
Yeah, we have a joke. This is actually our virtual selling. We used to say when we do a virtual selling call, customer would turn off their camera. Or like, if we can get them to turn on the camera, then we might have an opportunity. But that was their way of also shielding any personal touch to the virtual selling process, which again made it more challenging and made it more important to why you need to bring value to the call versus charisma. Because they aren't seeing the value on the front end, and that's their way of basically saying, I may turn on my camera if what I hear from you sounds like there's any forward path in this relationship.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about, right?
Yeah,
it's that forward path. And I think you are seeing this, right? Because we were talking about this, you know, sales reps want to be on the road. They want to be in person. They want to turn on the charisma
for sure.
But maybe a little later in the stay.
That's right.
And speeding up deals is a very important point that you brought up, is that especially if you have a lot of people involved, right?
Yep.
It's just one-on-one, it's not that big of a deal. But if you have four, five, six people on both sides involved, especially the higher up you go, getting everyone's schedules aligned in the same room,
that's right,
traveling could take months.
Yep.
But if you can do that, virtually, right?
No.
It might take a week or two.
Well, you're right. And even when you go back that 20 years ago of selling, you typically sold to a logistics or a traffic manager.
Yes.
Right? Now you sell to procurement, operations, VPs, sometimes even executives with all the supply chain issues that have gone on the last few years. So it does lead to that importance, since getting those five people on a call is almost impossible. And with all the virtual working environments today, there's low likelihood that they're all sitting in the same building. Right. So that's super important.
Very, 20 years ago, you didn't have the technology.
Right.
Well, you didn't even have technology.
That's right.
Department. So most of us, right? But you don't have your own technology department. You don't have their technology department that have to sit down and talk to one another as well. It adds in those layers.
That's right. That's right.
What do you think about supply chains and kind of what shippers are thinking about right now, especially international shipping?
Right.
What are their thoughts on the importance that they're placing on the supply chain today, as opposed to certainly 5 years ago, but even 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think if you go back 5 years ago, visibility was king, right? Let's talk about visibility. How do we provide technology that allows end-to-end visibility within your supply chain? Because most customers struggle. They don't usually single source their transportation.
Yeah.
So they're using multiple providers, multiple hundreds and hundreds of suppliers. So every time you can't see it, you got a challenge, right? Then you fast forward to COVID, became a capacity disaster. Anybody that had a truck or a plane or a boat could capture some significant market share and make a lot of money. And so that made supply chain executives start to rethink, like, oh my gosh, do we nearshore? Do we go to Mexico? What can we do to slow transit and, you know, mitigate some sort of risk? Well, now you fast forward today, you're on the international ocean side, you're in a almost a bottom feeder environment. Ocean went from a white glove delivery 2 years ago in terms of high touch to a back to a commodity where rates have bottomed out. And so now obviously people are looking at cost, but I still think you see a lot of effort. And even if you read the Wall Street Journal now, what I love about transportation and logistics today is I can talk about it with my friends and they know about it because the Wall Street Journal talks about clients trying to de-risk. And so a lot of supply chain executives are looking at either freight forwarder solutions providers to help them de-risk in the future, because even though it's a commodity today and the market's bottomed out, that doesn't mean change can't happen tomorrow. And how do you plan ahead versus just kind of, I think everybody's learned if you just ride the wave of it's okay, you're going to get burned and that can kill your sales and a lot of other
things. That was my next question. That risk portion of it, because that's one of the things I really see that's different in the entire corporate landscape, not just supply chain. It feeds down, is going from efficiency.
Yep.
At the highest efficiency, lean, everything.
Yep.
To risk.
Yep.
De-risk.
You
have to de-risk. You want a little bit, you want some redundancies in your systems.
Yeah.
You want to be a little bit more robust so that you can handle something like the pandemic.
Yep.
Yeah. Hopefully we never see that, but you know what? We probably will. Maybe not a pandemic, but we're going to see something.
Very likely.
That comes in and shocks the system. Maybe not as severe. Hopefully not for a few more years.
Yeah,
but it seems like every 20 years you find something bad that shocks the system.
For sure.
That the 70s, you have the oil crisis.
Yep.
Right. You have the OPEC blockade or embargo. That's the word I was looking for. The embargo. You know, the 80s had something. The 90s had something. It seems like it's always out there. The world.
That's right.
A risky place.
Yeah. No. I mean, it was funny. Our interns just took a tour of a high tech facility we have here at corporate, and part of the presentation they got was the robots that are going to be implemented in the warehouse. And so, you know, everybody talks about technology and robots and stuff like that, but when you think about it, that was a bad word 5 years ago.
Yep.
Like, oh, you're killing jobs, right? Today, you're looking at it as a de-risk option.
Yeah.
If there was a pandemic or if there was a continued labor shortage, how do we use robots to be more efficient, more productive, and allow the people that we love and want to support and continue to hire do other things?
Yep.
But it helps de-risk, and I laugh at like self-checkout machines, right?
Yes.
That was a job killer 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Today, everybody wants it because there's nobody or there hasn't been anybody for so many years due to pandemics and labor shortages to actually get you through the line at the grocery store, right? So it just completely flipped upside down.
It does. And then, you know, Pegasus, you guys are big into the warehouse space.
Yeah.
You know, that labor shortage that you're talking about.
Yep.
Have you felt the effects of that?
We did. So, I mean, it's kind of funny. So many
people. How is the warehousing market? I mean, we were talking about the ocean, you know, bottom feeders, you know, truck volume.
Yeah.
Warehousing is still pretty robust.
We're building on the warehousing front, expanding rapidly with new facilities right now that a lot of high-tech customers are pushing us to. But I think what's interesting for us and learning for us was so many people, you know, we value our employees, right? You know, we have this amazing culture. But what we had for a while there was we had probably a higher temp ratio in our warehouses. And so what we recognize is how do we connect with our people and how do we maintain lower turnover rates? And so we made a lot of our warehouse folks permanent to help offset the massive influx of people moving in and out of warehousing. Because what happened over the last few years is you make $18 an hour and then somebody offers you $19 and then somebody offers you $20 and it's a fight. There's no loyalty. So really staying people-centric, focusing on the culture aspect, and then making sure that we show our commitment to our people by transitioning them to permanent employees was a big deal for us. And it's helped us mitigate the all the labor dynamics. So we haven't had many challenges there outside of just trying to stay ahead of
the growth. Yeah. And so on the warehousing business side, still excess demand for warehousing space?
I would say for us in particular, it is a dogfight every single week to try and find space for customers. So we have more asks than we can deliver on any given week. So I was just on a call this morning. We found 30,000 square foot of space in one of our buildings that we could make work for a new client. But making sure we bring in the right type of business is critical because it is a constraint. We went from, I think, 100,000 square feet to 300,000 square feet in El Paso and ran out of space the minute we moved into the building. So it's like, you thought you were being proactive.
But
we weren't. So
in El Paso is very interesting. We've been talking about nearshoring and reshoring. I'm sure you've heard a lot about that. Mm-hmm. And you went from 100,000 square feet to 300,000, sold out just like that. So you know that nearshoring, at least, is happening
for sure.
There'll be a trend over the next 10 years.
I think 100%. I think, you know, everybody thinks it's easy to go to Mexico, mm-hmm. right? It's not easy, but I think what you're seeing is a lot of people moving in and trying to figure it out. Yeah. And I think, yes, 10 years from now, you're going to see Mexico win big in the supply chain space with the manufacturers, because again, you can get to the US in a day or two. To a DC, you can have your product to the consumer or to whoever you're delivering to within days versus that risk of years and, I mean, or 30 days, 45 days, in some cases, like lost cargo. And honestly, if you look at all the cost modeling, the cost modeling's come down so much, it's not like you're taking a tremendous risk to move over there. It's not cost neutral, but it's not 60% higher than it used to be 10 years ago.
One of the other big advantages that you can do is just about anywhere in the United States, certainly here in Dallas.
Yep.
You can get on a plane and be at your manufacturing.
Oh, hell yeah.
On site in hours.
Yes, for sure.
Without less jet lag.
Yeah, for sure.
This was a huge boom.
No, that is a huge deal, for sure.
It really is. You're talking about, you know, high value, high touch.
Yep.
Electronics, which got me thinking right now about risks.
Yep.
And, you know, you have Asia, you know, certainly, you know, all the conflict with China.
Yep.
You know, with manufacturing, about IP.
Yep.
That is another area that you could see an external shock system.
For sure.
Anytime.
Yeah.
Is having those trade routes, trades.
Yep.
Agreements being heavily disrupted.
For sure.
In a signature.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting when you look, you see Southeast Asia, you see India, you see Mexico, you see where people are talking about going. You've seen Apple exit parts of their business. You continue to see more customers exit. As a supply chain professional, you know, it's fun because your customers always have a challenge.
Yeah.
Right. And nothing is status quo, and nothing is what could be a commodity today isn't a commodity tomorrow for whatever supply chain shocks are there in the market. But we're watching all that. We're making sure we're talking to our customers, because the way we view the business in general is, you know, you can deliver stuff on time, you can fill them accurate, you cannot damage their product, but those are table stakes in the market. You've got to be innovative and like ahead of the game with your customers, or you might as well just exit, because somebody's going to get ahead of you and bring that value that you can't bring.
People are talking about India.
Yeah.
We're trying. Hearing that as well.
We're definitely seeing the talk. I think, you know, India's got the infrastructure challenges, but they also, I think, have the largest population in the world today, if not today, within the next couple years. So there, if I was running the country of India, I would be all over lobbying the heck out of manufacturers to come to a less political.
Yeah. You're talking about infrastructure challenges. That's one of the things about moving out of China is that no matter where you move, you're going to have those same infrastructure.
That's right.
Problems, just because it's been built up.
That's right.
Years, huge population, a lot of great ports.
Yep.
To choose from. You go to Vietnam, about 10% of the export volume out of China. It sounds really good on paper. But then you have to have the labor and workforce there. You have to have the infrastructure. Yep. the plants, all the facilities to actually do that, which makes it a challenge.
Well, there's so many dynamics that people don't think about, because again, it sounds easy. Just go move to the other country, but you know, half the raw materials come out of China.
I was about to say that.
So it's like, oh, oops. Well, we can move, but we still rely on the
a lot of the component parts.
The component parts
ain't there.
It's kind of like it's kind of like Mexico. We did a video recently. I think there's 10 trucks coming out of Mexico for every 3 going in.
Yeah.
Right. So if you were to boost production in that market, we got to figure out what's going to give, because that's already capacity constrained as it is today.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now what are you going to do if production doubles tomorrow?
Yeah.
So the market has to adapt and figure out how to, one, price it right to provide the capacity, but at the same time, don't price it to where it's not a feasible solution to go manufacture down there. Right.
And trucks, southbound, northbound trucks, traffic, you know, I spent 6 months in Laredo.
Yeah.
And that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was pretty tight.
For sure.
They tried over the last 10 years, probably even gotten worse of that mismatch.
Yep.
You said, wait, 3 southbound for every 10 coming up.
Yeah.
You feel the pain of that, and it's hard to get capacity in the right location.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. We had a client that we had to put tracking devices on the trucks, not for the transit, for the actual bridge crossings.
Yeah.
Because they would get stuck there so long, and they were trying to get cargo to El Paso to then flip and get to market. And that those delays would impact how they would distribute. And so it was more important on the bus than on the actual bridge than it was on the, while the truck was moving.
Moving in
South.
So,
yeah.
When you look at 2023 and into 2024, I mean, what are your thoughts? Where do you see the market? Where do you see the sentiment?
Well, I saw today the inflation data came out. I think we're 12 months in a row it's declined, which I think is going to be good for the overall economy, which should be good for the transportation world future state. But I think anybody in transportation, honestly, anybody that probably reads the news knows that I would say we're in a little bit of a freight recession, right? Tonnage is down. Rates are down. That's not good for asset-based providers that are having to fund all that equipment. So I think we would hope to see a turnaround in the year going into next year that would help a lot of these shippers and manufacturers, most importantly, which then would help the transportation companies on the back end.
So it's really good news. Inflation's down to 3%, been going down month over month. It's been tough for a lot of people during the interest rate rush,
for sure.
Rights during that time as well. Do you see any other green shoots for, you know, certainly the economy in general, but you know, what's good for the economy is good for transportation.
Yeah. I mean, I always tell all my friends, I'm like, I'm the indicator.
Yeah.
You got to come see me because like we ship the stuff. So we can see the tonnage declines. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I do think the interest rates are still bad. Right. So I even see it with automobiles, boats, all that stuff. You're starting to see sales go down. Yep. Because people don't want to pay 8% interest on a new car or a boat or whatever it is. But I think hopefully a lot of what happened during COVID was people imploded with inventory, right? So that's a lot of the reason why the warehouse space is so tight. Mm-hmm. People got overrun with inventory due to the panic of not being able to get cargo across the world. So I think as that inventory bleeds out, I think we'll start seeing one, more capacity in the market, and then two, you'll see some more investment, and you'll see manufacturing activity go up. And so hopefully that's sooner than later. But I would have never predicted the pandemic. I would have never predicted what happened to transportation during that time. So if I knew, I'd be a millionaire. But
I'm not a billionaire. If you could do that, it's interesting that, right? Because you can look at all the green shoots and kind of say this is what's going to happen in 2024, but then it usually is some surprise that comes out of left
field
that moves the market, world. Is
I mean,
you've got
right? Yeah, you've got UPS strikes talking. I think you got the Teamsters fighting with YRC right now. You know, a lot of those are typically, in my experience doing it 25 years, a lot of that's scary tactics, but if it happens, disruption across the market can get really crazy really fast. Because
it will.
Yeah, nobody can handle that capacity. It sounds easy. I'll just get more trucks, but or planes, but it's not that easy with the amount of critical mass those providers move on any given day.
And I don't think anyone should doubt that at all after going through the pandemic for a different reason.
Exactly.
Of finding that capacity, but it's going to check down to the same effect, right?
Exactly.
Scrambling to find new providers who can take on.
That's right. And actually, yeah, and I think you're right, because I think you're going to have people take it a lot more serious than they would have taken it 5 years ago. I think everybody's taken all of the supply chain potential risks.
Everyone's still in shock.
Yeah, they are.
Well, Hiram, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
And, you know, how does our viewers or listeners reach out and contact you directly?
Just LinkedIn. LinkedIn, Hiram Partnett. I'm based here at corporate. Pretty amazing company. I can connect to with anybody. We're always hiring, looking for awesome people. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thank you.
Awesome.
And this is going to wrap it for this episode of Put That Coffee Down.
Thanks, guys. I got friends, only wanna talk business. I got expenses, cause winning's expensive. I got expenses, cause winning's expensive. I've been getting out of work, and I've been shutting down the store.